All right. Hello, everyone. And so I have a curiosity question. It's not at all important. Is that your bedroom or is that a guest room that you're in, Ron? I love the bed. I always notice the bed behind you. It's a
bedroom.
It's your bedroom.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't know because sometimes people use guest rooms / offices, but the bed behind you is very nice. I always notice it when you're, Jacqueline's shaking her head. Yeah. We can't help but notice the furniture. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Consciousness in the Absolute, November 18, 1980. This is on page 13. Maharaj. My present outlook is without limitation. Total freedom. I think that's really interesting, by the way. You know, if he just said, my present outlook is without limitation, period, you know, people might imagine what that means. You know, like, you know, maybe it means if he wants to, he can become that fly and be flying around as the fly, right? There's no limitation, right? But then he qualifies. He says, total freedom. Total freedom. My present outlook is without limitation, total freedom. And interestingly, today in the Tao Te Ching teaching and then in Jacqueline's teaching afterwards, which is called As It Is, we discussed what is love. And one of the descriptors we came up with that was really a good descriptor for love is freedom. And if you didn't get a chance to hear those teachings, I highly recommend it. In fact, I'm considering making a special post that points people to those teachings. Again, we've all been talking about Dr. Jeffrey Martin this week. And one of the things that Dr. Jeffrey Martin mentioned was people from level 4 or location 4 and beyond, that those people do not experience the emotion of love. And I got emails about that, and you know, and some of what people said was, you know, I don't want that. I want love. So it might be really important that people listen to the discussions that happened today. So that's all I'll say about that because we don't have much time here. But and maybe I will make a special post pointing those teachings out to people so they can go and listen to them. But if you're hearing this, you didn't hear the teachings. That was today's Tao teaching that I did. And today's As It Is teaching that Jacqueline did, one right after the other. So again, Nisargadatta Maharaj says, my present outlook is without limitation, total freedom. Ultimately, one must go beyond knowledge, but the knowledge must come, and knowledge can come by constant meditation. By meditating, the knowledge, I am, gradually settles down and merges with universal knowledge and thereby becomes totally free, like the sky or space. Those who come here with the idea of getting knowledge, even spiritual knowledge, come here as individuals aspiring to get something. That is the real difficulty. The seeker must disappear. When you know your real nature, the knowledge I am remains. But that knowledge is unlimited. It is not possible for you to acquire knowledge. You are knowledge. You are what you are seeking. Your true being exists prior to the arising of any concept. Can you, as an object, understand something that existed prior to the arising of a concept? In the absence of consciousness, is there any proof of the existence of anything? Consciousness itself is mind, is thought, is all phenomena, all manifestation. Apprehending this is being dead to I am the body while alive. This kind of knowledge comes only in a rare case and is a very elusive kind of knowledge where no effort is necessary. In fact, effort itself is a hindrance. It is intuitive understanding. And there's more because there's a question, but I want to pause here and look at what he's already said before we go on. The question, I think, is a natural question. Let me at least point out the question. The question is a very natural question that we hear after people say things like effort is a hindrance, and after people say things like the seeker must disappear. Can you guys guess what the question is? The question is, then should all spiritual disciplines be dropped, right? And those are the kinds of questions we hear a lot related to those comments. So we'll look at his answer to that in a moment. But first, let's look a little more at what he has just said. It's interesting that he's talking about this knowledge. I feel like I did this recently, but you guys didn't see it because it was in retreat here. And other than Cheryl and Lynn, none of the rest of the people that I'm looking at right now are at the retreat. But at the retreat, we looked directly at what true knowledge is. And we can do that right now. Are you aware that you exist? Do you know that you exist? If I said to you, actually, you don't exist, you're all just figments of my imagination, would you believe me? Jacqueline seems pretty certain. How come, Jacqueline? Go ahead and take the mic. Why wouldn't you believe me?
Because I experience myself whether you're around or not.
You know you exist, right? Yeah. That's knowledge. That's knowledge. You see? People mistake things they've learned, you know, maybe things about politics, what's right and wrong, or the environment, or science, or, you know, spirituality, or anything they've learned. They mistake all of this stuff for knowledge, but none of that is true knowledge. That's all learned stuff, and the vast majority of it is probably even wrong, right? But you didn't have to learn that you existed. You didn't have those words at one time. You had to learn the words, I exist, but you didn't have to learn that you existed. And in fact, many of you know that I had an experience one time when my isness popped into an apple. And for a few seconds, I experienced myself as an apple. And you also know that when I experienced myself as an apple, there was absolutely nothing human about it. There was no thinking, right? There was no, I didn't know that I was an apple. An apple doesn't know that it's an apple. I discovered that when I came back to the human. So none of the things that are human were there. Certainly words like I exist were not there. But what I can tell you is the knowledge I exist was there, even as an apple. And in fact, that's what that experience did for me, is that really tuned me into what I really am. Because what I really am became the apple. That's why I say I was an apple, right? But the human wasn't the apple. The thinking mind wasn't there. You know, there was nothing human about it. So that experience tuned me into my real self, the part of me that could be a human or could be an apple, right? That's me. And even in the apple, the knowledge I exist was there without thought, without words. There was just this knowledge. So that is true knowledge. And so that's what Nisargadatta is referring to in this particular discussion. So he says, ultimately, one must go beyond knowledge, right? So if we're going beyond knowledge, what are we going beyond? Anybody? go ahead and unmute.
Thinking mind?
No, unfortunately, no. What's knowledge?
What did you say? What was your question?
Okay, so we just talked about what knowledge was, right? We know what knowledge is.
Oh, okay.
Now, Nisargadatta says, ultimately, one must go beyond knowledge. So what's that mean? Ryan, go ahead. You had something.
We have to go beyond the self, because self is, the I am is knowledge, and we have to transcend and go beyond that.
Yeah, the I am and the I exist are the same thing, right? We have to go beyond that. Go ahead. Yes, Jay.
There's no I that's going beyond that. That's the end of any I, right?
Well, I would be careful about thinking about this, because I think you're also going beyond that sense of existence. It's not just the I. See, that's where I think you have to be careful about this. Everybody's really anxious to drop the I. But if we remember when we were listening to Dr. David Hawkins, when he talked about going through the final doorway, what was he letting go of? What was he surrendering? Does anybody remember what words he used?
I saw that not too long ago. I mean, he was talking about like a grace or something.
Life itself.
Oh.
Remember, that's what he said. He'd surrendered everything. There was nothing left except life itself. Isn't that synonymous with existence? Right? And this is why people talk about a fear of death arises. You see, there's something, and until we go through the final doorway, we can't really know what it is. I think looking back, we will know exactly what it is. But there is a sense that we have of existence that is not ultimately true. And that is what is surrender when you pass through the final doorway. It's not just the I. In fact, based on Bernadette Roberts' wording of it, she dropped the I many, many, many years before she went through the final doorway. Right? So it's also the amness. Not just the I, but the amness. Now, obviously, there's still some type of existence. You know, obviously, there's something else on the other side of the door, but there's something that we're identified with, that we perceive as existence, that we perceive as the amness that we let go of. So ultimately, one must go beyond knowledge, but the knowledge must come. So before you can go beyond the knowledge, you have to realize the knowledge. In other words, that sense of I amness, that sense of I exist. Most people walking around, even though it's the most obvious thing in the world, I am, I exist, they give that absolutely no attention. So the first role is to give all of your attention to the I amness, all of your attention to the I exist. If you remember Bentinho Massaro's teaching, his teaching was to stop many times a day for 2 to 5 seconds and notice that you exist, right? That's the same as noticing the I amness. They're synonymous. So first, the knowledge must come. First, you have to realize yourself as the I amness. But ultimately, he says, you have to go beyond that. Again, this is what he says every week. It's funny. This is a very repetitive teaching, right? He says this to us every week. Ultimately, one must go beyond knowledge, but the knowledge must come. And knowledge can come by constant meditation, right? And that's also something he says to us pretty much every week, by constant meditation. And we all know that Nisargadatta Maharaj had a job and a family. So he wasn't like Michael Langford. Michael Langford didn't have, when he was doing his 12 hours a day, he didn't have a job at that point in his life, and he's never had a family. So it was very easy for him, because he had the desire to sit and meditate for 12 hours a day. Nisargadatta probably did not have that luxury. I don't know how much he meditated. In my imagination, it says 4 or 5 hours a day, but notice I use the word imagination. But he had a job, he had a family, so he had to get out there. So how was he in constant meditation? That means even when he was out there with people, he was focusing on the I am presence, maybe to a lighter degree. Like you can't disappear in samadhi when you're out there selling cigarettes or managing cigarette stands. But right this second, while everybody has their eyes open and they're listening to me, turn your attention to your I am. Turn your attention to your I exist, right? And in fact, one of the things we did at the retreat last week was we went out for snacks. And what I said, usually at a retreat, I don't allow social conversation. You know, it's either silence or focused on satsang type discussion. But this time I said, what we're going to do is we're going to have a normal social conversation. It's kind of funny because when you tell somebody they're about to have a social conversation, nobody can think of anything to say. So it took a bit of time for it to get going. All these chatty people, their mind goes blank. But I said, we're going to have a normal social conversation, just like you have out in the world with normal people. But what we're going to do while we're having this normal conversation is we're going to stay focused on the I am presence, right? And then the conversation started happening eventually, and you could watch as it went on. I could even see with my own eyeballs that they were forgetting. You could see the forgetting happening. And so at some point I said, pause and ask them how they were doing, right? And certainly there was a lot of forgetting going on. But what Nisargadatta is talking about here is not forgetting. Keeping some attention focused on the I am while at work and while with family, right? Not ever, you know, that would be the goal, right? It doesn't mean you won't forget, but you know, if you're going to set the goal, if you're going to set the stretch goal in this case, you're not going to set the goal to remember 50% of the time, right? You're going to set the goal to remember all of the time. You just want to be careful not to judge yourself and beat yourself up when you forget. You know, you got to watch that part. But the goal is all of the time. Do you agree with that? And every time you find that you have gone off task, you bring yourself back. So even though ultimately one must go beyond knowledge or beyond the I amness or beyond that strong sense of I exist, and we'll even take the I out of it, we'll just call it that strong sense of existence, right? Even though ultimately you're going to go beyond that, the first step is to go very deeply into that. And you do that through constant meditation. He says, by meditating, the knowledge I am gradually settles down and merges with universal knowledge. So now he's using the word knowledge again, but he's using it differently, right? Now the knowledge of I am, that strong sense of existence, he says, settles down, emerges with the universal knowledge, whatever is beyond it. Sometimes this is called pure consciousness or infinite awareness, right? Becomes totally free, like the sky or space. Now, what's also interesting to me about that sentence, let me read the sentence to you again. By meditating, the knowledge I am gradually settles down and merges with the universal knowledge and thereby becomes totally free, like the sky or space. So what he's really saying is total freedom doesn't occur until this point. Certainly there's an increasing sense of freedom as you go further and further on this spiritual path. But as long as the sense of existence is there, total freedom doesn't exist. Can anybody figure out why?
Because, I mean, existence is temporary. I mean, it has a beginning and an end as we know it. And therefore, you're not free of that.
Yeah, and I would say probably there's somewhere within an inherent fear of that end. Mm-hmm. Right? So how can you be free if you're still carrying an inherent fear of the end of your existence? Only when you've transcended that can you be totally free. Then he says, those who come here with the idea of getting knowledge, even spiritual knowledge, come here as individuals aspiring to get something. That is the real difficulty. Now, I hear two things in that sentence. One, they come here as individuals. And two, they come here to get something. I think both of those are the problem, right? It's not just the getting something part of the sentence. I think it's the as individuals aspiring to get something. So they come here, first of all, as not only this, even prior to the sense of I am, they come here as the sense of me, I'm going to call it, the sense of me, and they feel like me is missing something, lacking something, and they want to obtain it. And really, truly, let's be genuinely honest here, who do we want to obtain it for? Me. That's a problem, right? We come here as me, and we want to get something more for me, right? And so he says the seeker must disappear. Now, this doesn't mean that we're not going to be in constant meditation. This means the me that wants to get something for the me has to go away. Right? At some point, it dawns on everyone that the me isn't going to wake up. There's nothing to get for the me. Yeah, Cheryl, you want to say something?
I have a question. So is the seeker different than the observer?
Yeah. Yeah, the seeker is different than the observer. The seeker is the me who's trying to obtain something from me. You know, like the me that wants to be an enlightened me. Right? And I think we all start there. Pardon?
I agree.
Okay. So I think we all start there. I mean, is there anybody here that did not start as a me wanting to get something for the me? I wanted to be more loving, or I wanted to be enlightened, or some people even think that this is the way to get rich, you know? Right? So he says at some point that must disappear, and that's just absolutely true. That me wanting to obtain something from me has to disappear at some point. Because that's just not at all what the spiritual path is about. But that does not mean that I'm not going to be meditating constantly. You see? And maybe the seeker can't even quite understand that. Like, if I'm not getting anything from me, why would I meditate? You know? But the one who has dropped that, still, I called it last night, still feels the calling, still feels pulled forward and understands, but there's no more an idea that I'm getting something from me. In fact, in some point, it becomes very, very clear that I'm going to die to myself, right? You have an understanding that that's really what this is talking about. You're not getting anything from me. Me is going to die, right? He says, when you know your real nature, when you know your real nature, the knowledge I am remains, but that knowledge is unlimited. When you know your real nature, the knowledge I am remains, but that knowledge is unlimited. Now, I'm not 100% sure what he means by that. I don't know if he's using the words I am in a different context, like now you know the absolute and you know that it's there, or if he means that you're aware of the I am, like as long as the body still exists, the I am still exists, but now you also have an unlimited awareness of truth too. I'm really not sure what he means by that. So I'll just say that. But we'll read the sentence again. When you know your real nature, the knowledge I am remains. But that knowledge is unlimited. So that's something that we'll just have to find out what that means. Maybe later the clarity will come. He says that it is not possible for you to acquire knowledge. You are knowledge. We know what that means, right? You are what you are seeking. We know what that means. And in fact, when we're meditating constantly, we're contemplating ourself, our awareness, our existence. We're not contemplating something outside of us. We're not contemplating some spiritual concept. Like, we're not contemplating this sentence. We're not contemplating the sentence that I don't understand that says, when you know your real nature, the knowledge I am remains, but that knowledge is unlimited. We don't contemplate that sentence. We contemplate our own I am-ness. And as Nisargadatta has said elsewhere, as you contemplate your own I am-ness, it reveals its secrets. So all of the knowledge that Nisargadatta has, whatever that sentence means, that comes by us contemplating our own I am-ness. Right? So we are the knowledge that we're seeking. Therefore, we contemplate ourselves. That is contemplating knowledge. And I am out of time. So we'll just have to revisit this message next week and continue from here. But I would say that if we want to leave ourselves with something, what we want to leave ourselves with is an intention to contemplate the I am constantly. Just do your best. But that's the intention, right? Contemplate the I am constantly. Thank you, guys.